Whenever I wrote a story about almost any topic, I tried to find something funny to put in there just because I like to liven up the story. I don't like things to be solemn. And some people will just write a series of little stories, anecdotes, and sometimes they follow those up with the lesson they learned. Start out writing something that you think was interesting.
Welcome to the Common Creative Podcast. My name's Paul Fairweather.
And I'm Chris Meredith. And together we're on a journey to lift the lid or open the book on creativity at work and beyond through the lens of ideas, stories, and visual cognition.
And today's episode is an interview with James R. Hegarty. He is the obituary journalist for the Wall Street Journal. An absolutely fantastic conversation. And a lot of around his fairly recent book called Yours Truly, which is a great lesson, contains great lessons about storytelling and writing.
Yeah, because I think we're fascinated to hear from him because I think there's no harder story to tell than your own story because it's confused, it's fogged by all of those too many details and your own motivations and so on. So really helpful for creative people to understand how to get ideas across when you've lived the pain and the joy of developing.
Yeah. And look, he has, in the interview, he tells us about three main questions that he uses to draw out when he's writing obituaries. But, you know, a life lesson for us all to ask those questions of ourselves, whether we're writing our own story or not.
I would say, if you're listening, listen to the very end, because I'm sure you're going to want to know about James's own obituary, and he reveals all at the very end of the podcast.
Okay, let's get him in. James Hegarty, welcome to the Common Creative Podcast.
James, great pleasure to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
James, can we just start off by giving us a quick potted history about how you got to be where you are? The major turning points in your life, I suppose.
Okay. Well, it was all really an accident. As in most people's lives, I never set out to write obituaries. In fact, if you'd told me when I was 18 years old that I was going to be an obituary writer, I probably would have started crying and thought I was a terrible failure. But I did want to be a journalist. My parents were both journalists, and I wasn't very original and decided to do the same thing. From my teenage years, I wanted to write for newspapers. I managed to make a career on the Wall Street Journal and worked in New York and then in Hong Kong, in Paris, Brussels, London, back in Atlanta, back in Hong Kong. I moved all over the world for many years, and I covered many different things. And in fact, when I was covering mostly business, going around the world, interviewing CEOs, writing about companies, and often I would call up big shots and ask them for an interview. And often they didn't even return my call. But I do have to tell you that after I started writing obituaries, I found out that some of the same big shots were dying to have me write about them. So things come around in the end. I became an obituary writer because I was living in London and I was reading the British papers, and I noticed that they wrote really interesting, funny obituaries. They didn't try to make people sound like saints. They gave you the warts and all, and they weren't solemn. They were just stories about what happened in people's lives. And I thought that I would read them even though I'd never heard of the people. And so that gave me the idea that, well, obituaries can really be fun. And so I had that in my mind, and when the Wall Street Journal about 8 years ago decided they were going to have a full-time obituary writer for the first time, I volunteered for the job, and I got the job, and it was the best part of my career.
Fantastic. So, and James, you've recently written a book, Yours Truly, and I suppose in some ways, in the beginning of that book, there are three questions, which I think are amazing questions for anyone to ask themselves at any point in their life, but you frame it around obituaries. Which I think is sort of almost asked, but I'm going to ask you those three questions, James. What was your idea or your plan for your life? Why? And how did that work out for you? Maybe you've just answered that anyway.
Yes, those are sort of the three basic questions. And I just came up with that because in trying to write about somebody's life, I had to kind of have a starting point. And it seemed to me the most interesting starting point would be, what was this person trying to do with his life? And then the obvious follow-ups are, well, why?
Mm.
And then how did that work out? And I find that when you talk to family members and friends, they almost never know that why. They know what the person was doing, but they don't really know why. They never thought of asking that. So often only you know that. And as for how it worked out, that's kind of a matter of opinion, but the most interesting opinion about how your life worked out is your opinion. What did you think about it? So I think those are just three good questions if you're writing about somebody else's life, as I always am doing, but also when you're thinking about your own life. And it doesn't have to wait for your obituary. You know, those are good things to ask at any time in your life to sort of give yourself a checkup. What am I trying to do here? And is it working out? And if not, how can I change the game plan?
Any tips on helping people answer that second question of why?
I'll give you a little story of my own. I remember as a child asking my mum, kind of as we were growing up, mum, how did you make the decisions that you made about the way we were brought up by you? I remember the look in her face, and she looked this abject kind of, I have no idea how, we just, every day I got up and we coped. That was it. There were no decisions. In her mind anyway, of course there were decisions being made all the time, but in her mind there was no master plan. It was just get up, cope, go to bed. So how do you help people burrow deeper to that and get to that why if they struggle by themselves?
It is a difficult question often, I think, because we don't always really think about it, as you were pointing out, and because maybe we don't really have a great, you'd like to think you have a really noble, inspired reason for doing what you're doing. And maybe it's just because it was the easiest thing for you to do. You felt it was your only choice, but whatever it was, it's worth looking into that question. You might not have a brilliant answer to it. You might not have a definitive answer to it, but at least it's a good idea to explore that a little bit. You know, why did I make these choices? Well, I'm not absolutely sure, but these might have been some of the contributing factors, and this is what was on my mind.
Is there a good moment? Oh, I love the idea of writing. Maybe obituary is the wrong word because it's got a kind of heavy overtone to it, but writing your own story, which is a tool for kind of investigating what does drive you and what has shaped you and so on. I just wonder, are there any great moments to do this exercise? The obvious moment is when you're feeling very old and you're feeling like the journey may be nearly over. It's time for me to record this stuff for posterity. It's a bit late, I would suggest, to do it at that point, because if you do learn something about yourself, there's not much you can do except wheel your wheelchair to the bathroom, maybe. When is a good moment to write your own story, to write your own, I'm going to say obituary, but you know what I mean, write, to reflect on what you've done and why you've done it?
Yeah, I agree with you that obituary is probably the wrong word to use. I used to tell people, you know, you should write your own obituary because if you leave it to your friends and family, they're going to make a hash. Lately, I've decided it's not a good idea to tell people to write their own obituary for a couple of reasons. One is that some people don't like to think about death, and they'll be freaked out. The other is that you're letting them off a bit too easy, because if they've seen obituaries, the typical obituary that people get, which is pretty brief and pathetic, they'll think, well, I could do that in 5 minutes. They won't really put a lot of thought and effort into it. So yeah, I do tell them now, you know, try to tell your life story, or at least some of the most important or interesting things that have happened to you, the things you want to tell about your life. And as for when you should start as soon as possible. If you're 15 or you're 25 or whatever age you are, you don't want to leave it for your deathbed, because you probably won't be in the mood at that point. And so it's a good thing just to think about your life from time to time and what's happened to you, and put down a few notes, write a letter to somebody, or save some social media post that you made where you described an interesting thing that happened to you. Whatever you can do just to gather up a little bit of material and put it away in a file called My Life, that can be very helpful both for you and in the future for future generations who may wonder about their forebears.
James, you mentioned that you decided that you were interested in obituaries when you read the English version, and they were quite funny. Your book, Yours Truly, is a great read, and I, you know, many times I laughed out loud at some of the stories you conveyed. And did you consider yourself a humorist before you started writing obituaries? Like, did you have humor in your in your articles you wrote about business and other things, or was this something new to you?
No, I really always did. I don't know why that is, but whenever I wrote a story about almost any topic, I tried to find something funny to put in there just because I like to liven up the story. I don't like things to be solemn. So I've always tried to inject a bit of humor into my stories, but without, you know, making it just a big joke. You'll see the occasional obituary life story that's just one joke after another, and I think that's kind of a shame.
It's lovely to hear you say that, a professional
when
obituary writer.
When you talk to people about their lives, often what they tell you is the funny things that happened. And if you go to a funeral and there's a eulogy, what makes a funeral bearable is the eulogy where somebody recalls some of the odd habits and doings and sayings of the deceased, and everybody laughs, and then they kind of relax, yep, and they feel, yeah, you know, we're never going to forget him or her. That's a good feeling to have.
James, I wanted to ask you, you said earlier, like, you know, it was almost by accident, like most of things in life. I just wanted to ask you about the story about your mother being very content writing for the Des Moines, is it? No, Times or whatever.
It's much smaller than Des Moines. I grew up in a town called Grand Forks, North Dakota, and that's where my mom still lives. My mom is 97 years old and still writing for the local newspaper. She's been writing for the local newspaper really all her life since she was a teenager. So she's one of my role models.
Well, the whole life. And she wrote she did the restaurant reviews, I believe, and she wrote one about a chain.
Right. Yeah. It's a strange story about my mom. It's kind of hard to believe what happened. But when my dad died, we didn't really write a very good obituary for him because we weren't really prepared and we never really asked him much about his life. We didn't know why he did what he did. So when my mom was 79 years old, I decided, okay, I'm going to sit her down and we're going to ask her some questions about her life and take some notes, and I'm going to write her a story because she's not going to do it. So I'll do it. And I figured, you know, she's 79 years old. How much more could happen? Well, 6 years later, my mother suddenly became famous, and it happened in a strange way. She had, for many years, written little reviews of local restaurants. And they weren't even really reviews. They were just kind of descriptions. But she thought, you know, I'll tell people what's on the menu, what's popular, you know, what it's like to go there. And for some reason, these were really popular. One day, she did a review about a restaurant called the Olive Garden. I don't know if anybody in Australia has ever heard of this chain. The Olive Garden is a chain restaurant in America that serves Italian food. And it's the kind of place that, you know, kind of reliable, fairly affordable food that a lot of people like. But any food snob would never go there, you know, because it's not authentic. But my mother, she wrote a story about Olive Garden, and she said some nice things about it. And all of a sudden, bloggers in other parts of the country started writing stories about how funny it was that this grandmother in North Dakota had written a positive, unironic review of the Olive Garden, you know, where the sophisticated big city people would never be caught dead. And it must have been a quiet day because this kind of generated a lot of lively conversation on the internet. And all of a sudden, reporters were calling up my mom from New York and Minneapolis and all over. And they all were asking her how she felt about being mocked all over the internet. And she said, well, I'm fine with it, you know, but I've got to finish my column for tomorrow. And then I've got to go off to Bridge Club. And I don't have time to read all this crap. That's exactly what she said. And that is when she went viral, because readers loved the fact that this grandmother in North Dakota wasn't going to take any shit. Sophisticated bloggers and columnists across the country. And so she was invited to appear on all of the national TV shows. And she met Anthony Bourdain, who is was a famous food writer and TV personality. He liked her. And he told his publisher that you should publish a book by my mom, Marilyn Haggerty. And so they published this book. It's called Grand Forks, and it's a collection of 100 reviews of restaurants in Grand Forks, North Dakota, most of which closed decades ago. And they published it in a beautiful volume, and my mom got a big advance. And so my mom at 85 became quite famous. And it lasted for a long time. It's still not quite over. You know, people will call her up from time to time and ask her for her opinion on this or that. So the message there is just that, you know, just because you're 79 or 80 years old doesn't mean that nothing unexpected can ever happen to you. And so I had to update my mom's story.
Yeah. So, James, I think in the book you mentioned that no one asked you to do a piece, and so you just did it yourself for the Wall Street Journal.
That's right. Everybody was interviewing my mom, and I kept waiting for the editors of the Wall Street Journal to ask me to write about her because I knew more about it than anybody else. Nobody asked me, so one morning I just sat down and batted out this story, and so I had a story about my mom on page one of the Wall Street Journal. I'm pretty sure I'm the only Wall Street Journal reporter who's ever written a story about his mom on page one. And my mom was so busy at that point that I couldn't even call her up and ask her for a comment. But one thing I pointed out in my story was that sophisticated readers of my mom's column know that if she doesn't really think the food is that great, she won't say anything because she doesn't want to offend people and she doesn't want to hurt somebody's business. But she might talk more about the decor than the food. So it's kind of a hint. And so I noted in the story that she had actually spent quite a bit of space in her review talking about the decor at all. And so the editors of the paper said, you're implying that the food isn't that great at Olive Garden. You better get a comment from Olive Garden. So I had to call up the company that owns Olive Garden and ask them if their food was any good and give their official response then.
The chefs at the Olive Garden said, our food's fantastic. You should try it.
I love that story. That is,
James, I'd love to sort of flip back to the world of obituaries or telling your life story. Because I imagine the great advantage as a obituary writer or a life story writer, it's easy to do it from the outside. It's very hard to do from the inside. And I imagine people listening to this say, I should do that. I should grab a pen and just make some notes. A folder called My Life and things that have gone on. But then you get confronted by that blank sheet of paper or a blank computer screen and you go, and it feels very scary to start to put yourself out there a bit. It's much easier to tell somebody else's story than your own story, and so on. And so how do you cross that bridge and get people to just start that process of putting stuff out there that they've had or they've learned or they've experienced?
Yeah, it is a tough thing to get started. And I had to try to knock down all of the reasons for not doing it. One of the first reasons people come up with is, I'm not famous. Who's going to care about my life? Won't people think I'm really conceited if I'm writing about my own life? And my answer is no, they won't. Because when I look back at my father, I realize now that I never asked him why he became a journalist. And now I'd really like to know that, but it's too late. And there are a lot of things I'd like to ask him. And so if you're writing about yourself and you're not famous, it's because you think there might be somebody, one or two people maybe, who could be interested, and you're doing something for them. So it's not conceited. It's something that you're doing for friends and family and also for yourself because it's kind of a useful way of assessing what's up with your life and coming to terms with what you've done and why. It's not something that everybody will do. There are a lot of people who are just not interested in the past. Not their own, or not anybody else's. They just want to look forward. Okay, fine. If you're that kind of person, you just don't do it.
A buddy who's going to prompt you is it? You should note that down in your My Life folder. You should pop that. This is a chapter in your write. You need a buddy to kind of prompt you or to push you into doing
right.
it.
Maybe that. So some people won't do it, but I think most of us, or a lot of us, do think it's worth recording a bit about ourselves. Do find it kind of interesting to look back and think about what we've been doing and why and how it worked out. Think that's a good idea, but then that they just don't get around to it because they're busy with other things. And where would you start? So I tell them, if you're unimaginative like me, you can just start at the beginning. And so, with mine, I started out, I was born on a cool rainy afternoon, my mother gave birth to me on a cool and rainy afternoon in Minneapolis in July of 1956. And then she had a cigarette. And it just flowed from there. The point is, you know, you could just start anywhere. But for me, it was just easy just to start at the beginning and tell it in chronological order. Some people pick some exciting incident and start with that and then circle back to explain the background. And some people will just write a series of little stories, anecdotes. And sometimes they follow those up with the lesson they learned from that. And that can be an effective way to write your story in a way that, you know, may be educational for your grandchildren or your children or whoever. So that you can do it in any order. But the point is, just get started. Start out writing something that you think was interesting. And then you can add to it. Once you get started, other things pop into your head.
James, I just wanted to say for the listeners, in your book, you have a enormous amount of prompts about, you know, things to jog your memory. So you do have some great prompts there in there about, you know, what to ask. But I also want to just make the comment you were saying about why people don't do it because, you know, I'm not interesting. And I think you also make the point in there that people think, well, you know, I didn't do anything, you know, famous. But you make the point in there that you're curious and you say, I'm curious about the lives of people who were deeply flawed, occasionally monstrous and often exasperating. In other words, ordinary. And I think that, you know, and I've been writing my own story, and it is those, as you talk about, you know, that our flaws or frequent sins, our follies, our errors, which most people say, well, I don't want to share that. You know, I don't want to make myself look bad. But that is what really makes us interesting and human, I suggest, is what you're sort of uncovered.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I always tell people, you know, this is not an application or nomination for sainthood. It's, you want to write the true story of your life. So you want to throw in some of the crazy and dumb things you did. You don't have to confess everything, though. And nobody's going to tell all of the embarrassing incidents from their life. But I think it's a good idea to acknowledge that you know, not everything went as planned and you did some dumb things. And here's what I learned from them. You want to think carefully about what you want to share. Some people will share a lot. Some people will only share a little. But if something major went wrong in your life, it's good to address that in some way. For instance, myself, I got married very young and I got divorced. And so I'm not going to spend a 1,000 pages on that, but I'm going to try to explain briefly what happened and what I think about it and why it happened. And I'm going to take my share of the blame for it, which was 90%. Because I'm not going to attack anybody else in my story. Because I don't want to, you know, in the afterlife be a pain in the butt.
James, I have a very practical question for you about this. Because something I do when I'm not podcasting is I'm a photographer, and like most photographers, work with digital images. And the fear all photographers have of digital images is that they will vanish into the cyberspace. When you're not looking, your hard drive will crash, the internet will get hacked, or it just gets lost somewhere. And in a way, the same question applies to your writing a life story, something that people will look at long after you've gone, maybe for generations to come. How do you make sure it doesn't get, if you put it in a folder in the attic, you know, it'll get chucked into a skip. How do you physically make sure that stuff doesn't get lost?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, what a lot of people do is they record something. Maybe a family member interviews grandpa about the old days, war memories, et cetera. But they've done it on some format that then just disappears and nobody knows where it is or how to use it. So my advice is record it or write it in whatever tool is at hand, but also make a copy on paper and entrust it to the people who are most likely to care. Make a few copies. Usually in any family, there's somebody who's kind of interested in family history. Make sure that person has it and knows about it. And it's not going to last forever, but it can last for a while. We're still reading about, you know, Samuel Pepys's experiences in the 16th century, and we're still reading about Anne Frank and many other people who were not famous, but thought it was worth writing down a few lines about their lives. Most of us are not going to be read hundreds of years from now, but I just like to think, you know, if my children or any grandchildren would wonder about me, here's something they can look at.
Yeah.
And if not, yeah, if they exactly. don't, well, I had fun doing it. So I'm not going to worry about it.
I think that it's a lovely thought, isn't it? That it, even if they don't, you know, it's good for you to write stuff in your life and
a
so
lot
on.
Of people get hung up on because they think they need to have some great theme or message. And I think that's a mistake because very few of us have any real original message for the world. So don't worry about that. Just write what you've experienced and what you thought about it. And even if it's not that unusual or original, it's still of interest.
Do you find, it's going to sound like a very heavy duty question, but I think well, the thing about obituaries is they're about death, and death is a taboo. We're not allowed to talk about death. Actually, between you and I, none of us are ever going to die. You know, all of those kind of things come out. And an obituary says, you're going to die, or maybe after, you know, you will die, and we need to have something to write about you. Do people get more comfortable with the death when you talk about obituaries, when you talk about life stories? It helps open the door to something that is going to happen, but we don't like to think about it.
Yeah, well, I often write obituaries in advance about people, and it is a bit tricky because you call up somebody and say, we're writing your obituary. It's not exactly the best way to start the day. But what I try to tell people is, look, well, for one thing, an obituary is not about death. It's a life story, and the death is only a pretext for telling it. But also, I tell people, you know, we hope you're going to be around for a long time. But someday, when you die, you know, people are going to want to read about this, and we want to make sure we get it right. And we'd like to have your input. We don't want to just make it up or rely on what other people say. You know, because when you ask other people after a death, that they just give you all the cliches, and everybody would sound the same. And they're always devoted to family above all else. They treated everybody the same, whether it was the janitor or the president.
They're kind and caring, darling. Yeah. I love that kind of, I don't know if you call it a stick to beat people with. We want to get it right. You know, imagine if we make a mistake and you're not there to kind of correct it. It'll go down in history as the facts, even though they're not right facts. So you can help us get it right.
I think that matters really to a lot of people. Yeah, that would bother more than anything else. You know, there's some simple dumb mistakes. So you know, you forgot to mention one of the grandchildren, or you misspelled a name.
Or those things about. I could say, I imagine you were motivated by career success, or no, that was never it. It's nothing about this sort of thing is what's. You could make assumptions.
Yeah, really what got me started on this was when I write obituaries, I'm often talking to the adult children of somebody who's just died, and I'm struck by how much they want this story to be told and preserved, but how little they know about it. They often don't know some of the most basic things. Sometimes they don't know whether their parents graduated from college or what they studied, or why they studied this or that, or how they got into this career. And so that got me thinking that we really have to do it ourselves, at least get a start on it.
You've made me think, there's a guest we had on this show a while back. He's an author, and he's published 3 books so far, all of which are very funny and full of life lessons. But his prompt for writing them is a birthday with a naught at the end. And his first one was called Fat 40 and 5. This is Nigel Marsh, I'm sure Paul knows this. A British guy now living in Australia. First one was about, you know, at the peak of his career, being fired from his job and having to cope with a midlife crisis. Then it was 50, can't remember what number and what. His most recent one is... smart, stupid, and 60. So he's reflecting on the last 10 years. I just wonder if that's a really interesting formula to say, right, have a moment to review every 10 years. Have a look back. What have you learned? What's happened to you? And so on and so on. Maybe that's a kind of
a way to do it.
Packaging your life story.
Definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, otherwise it's something you always put off till tomorrow, isn't it? You just kind of, someday I'll get around to it and other people will do it and I can't
press it. Yeah, you have to impose a little bit of a schedule on yourselves. You know, you could say, I'm going to sit down once a month for 15 or 20 minutes, jot some stuff down. Depends on how much you want to write. Some people will just write maybe a few pages, and that can be very valuable. Other people might want write 500 pages, and that's fine too if you want to do it. But set yourself a schedule. I'm going to set aside X time every week or every month and just jot some things down. And don't worry about whether you're what kind of literary style you're using or whether you've got all the grammar right or the spelling right. It's never going to be perfect, but
don't wait till things are perfect, because you know that's obviously the problem. We've got to draw to a close, surely. James, can you tell us? Have you written your own?
I'm working on it. But you know, that's how this whole project started with the book. I've written way too much, probably about 45,000 words, because I certainly write down just everything I remember that I thought was interesting. It's too much, so I'll have to cut it back, and I'll have to finish the last couple of decades. But I've got a good start on it.
Yeah, great. I mean, look,
sounds like one for ChatGPT. Just pop it onto an AI bot to cut this down. 5,000 words for me.
Have to wait for you to ask James to publish before you pass.
Well, I don't think it'll ever be published. I'm not sure it'll ever be read. But if somebody really wants to read it, it'll be there.
Okay.
My kids can email it to you if you like.
That'd be great. James, thank you so much for your time tonight, in your case, today in our case. It has been great. Look, as I said earlier, I just could not put your book down, yours truly. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And you know, the tips in there for storytelling and writing are real gems as well. So thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you. You're very kind and generous, and I appreciate your interest in this topic.
Thank you, James, too, from me. I've learned loads about storytelling, loads about you. I've really enjoyed this podcast together.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Right, that was great. Chris, how's your life story going?
Oh, I still have this terrible fear. You know, I've got a pen right now in my hand, but I'm thinking I've got to jot some stuff down, and I never have done. And I think I can only attribute it to fear. What would I find out if I wrote about things that I've done? And I absolutely should. A, because it's good for you, and B, because there might actually be people who want to know that story. So it's a great, I think it's a really powerful, practical podcast. Make some notes. Don't worry about the big idea. Don't worry about your literary style. Just put some stuff down.
Yeah. And I love those three questions. You know, what was the plan? Why? And how's that going for you? I just think that, you know, whether I'm writing my own story, just as a check-in for anybody, because he says, you know, sometimes we don't think about why we're doing things, you know, and it doesn't have to be necessarily a big reason, but that middle questions is a tough question.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people it's kind of hardwired, and that's why you don't know the answer. It's kind of, yeah, it's just, I don't think it through. This is what's obvious. I love that expression I hear people say sometimes when they say, I have no choice. And what they're saying is that's hardwired into me. I couldn't imagine another way of navigating the issue. Whereas obviously, we all of us have choices to. So, yeah, a really powerful podcast, I think.
Yeah, so we trust you enjoyed today's episode. Please leave us a review or a rating would be great. And amongst the best things to do is to tell your friends.
But yeah, please tell your friends. It helps us get the message out there about the Cobbler Brady podcast. It helps our wonderful guests get the message about what they're up to. So please tell your friends. Please make some notes about your own life story. And we'll see you for next week's episode.
Ciao.